Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Here we are, everybody. The end of the line for the TOS and TNG movies. We're going to be wrapping up this short sort of interlude in the podcast with Star Trek Nemesis, the 10th film in the Star Trek universe. It came out in 2002. In this film, the crew of the USS Enterprise E are forced to deal with a threat to the United Federation of Planets from a Reban clone of Captain Picard named Shinzon, who has taken control of the Romulan Star Empire in a coup d'etat. We're joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I was excited for the part where he told him that Picard merely adopted the dark. Shinzon was born there.
There's a lot of crossover there about being born
there's
in the dark.
There's a lot of Bane crossover in this movie. Like his Shinzon's entire backstory is basically just Bane's backstory.
Yeah, it's true.
Minus the clone part, but everything else is pretty much the same.
Minus that and the voice masking or whatever. But they are very, very similar in a lot
even
of ways.
There's a little bit of Bane. Obviously it's the same actor, but yep. there's a little bit in there. Yeah.
Yeah. This was directed by Stuart Baird. We've never heard that name before, and you will never hear his name again afterwards.
Three movies.
Yes, Executive Decision is one of them.
Yes, big editor, though. He's a very big-name editor. You'll see his name on a lot of stuff as an editor.
Yes. Screenplay goes to John Logan. Story goes to John Logan, Rick Berman, Brent Spiner. It came out... When did this come out? I said 2002. The exact date was December 13th, 2002. For a budget of $60 million, it made $67 million at the box office.
just made it over
just
the
line. Just made it back. Yeah, some executives were very, very happy. We're here with the final wrap-up. We're going to be doing Nemesis, which is, I will get this out of the way first. This film is generally despised by the Star Trek fandom, if I could speak generally. We'll get into all that. We're going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down Star Trek Nemesis.
It's called a cascading biogenic pulse. The unique properties of Thaleron radiation allow the energy beam to expand almost without limit. Depending on its radiant intensity, it could encompass a ship or a planet.
He would only have built a weapon of such scope for one reason. He's going off to Earth.
How can you be certain?
I know how he thinks. Destroy humanity. You cripple the Federation.
The Romulans invade.
No way of penetrating his cloak.
No.
So he could pass within 10 meters of every ship in Starfleet and they'd never know.
We do have one advantage, though. He needs your blood to live. He might come after you first.
I'm counting on it. We've been ordered to Sector 1045. Our fleet has been diverted to meet us there.
Strengthen numbers.
Yes, at least that's what we hope. He must not be allowed to use that weapon. All other concerns are secondary. You understand me?
Yes, sir.
All hands, battle stations.
All right, Clay. So I ended the last Insurrection podcast with saying that I was going to bring up something that I've never seen people complain about for some reason. They probably do, and I just never read it. But I checked. I read a lot of reviews after I watched this last night, and I never saw this part brought up. I went to Memory Alpha. I never saw – Memory Alpha is like the Wikipedia for Star Trek, and there was right. No mention of it. I don't understand, and maybe this will be a weird thing. We can get into it later. It might be a tough starting point. I don't understand why in a movie where Brent Spiner is playing a clone of Data, Patrick Stewart does not play Shinzon in this movie.
That's a good question. not that I know the exact answer to that question, but I was watching some of the special features, and they were in the making of thing. They were talking to Brent Spiner, and he said they went through many different versions of the script, and one of those versions was where Patrick Stewart plays both roles.
Okay.
But I think Patrick Stewart didn't want to do that or something. He gave like this weird diplomatic response where he was like, but Patrick's, you know, a representation, and we all decided that maybe that wasn't the best way to go, or right, something sure, like that.
I think it's a mistake. I think that, like, even nothing against Tom Hardy, and I think he's fine in this, but I think you lose a lot by not having Patrick Stewart play that role against himself.
Yeah, I think that would have been really interesting, if only because he's never done it before. He's never played a well. I mean, I guess he has recently. That's right. He was the bad guy in
that horrible movie,
that Mel Gibson movie.
Oh, I was thinking Ransom, right?
No, Conspiracy Theory. Conspiracy Theory.
That's right. He's
but
also
even there.
He's the bad guy in Toy Soldiers or whatever that movie is.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
But even there, I feel like Patrick Stewart playing a villain is basically just playing Patrick Stewart slightly to the left. You know? But having him play Shinzon would probably require him to take a different tack altogether, which could have been really interesting.
Yeah, and I think we'll get further into this. I guess we should get rid of the nuts and bolts and everything before.
I will say to lead into that conversation, though, I think that the choice to use a younger guy works in a movie that supports the choice. And this my breakdown of this movie is a very thematic movie that has absolutely no themes in it.
Yeah, right. Yes, it's the most deeply thematic, pure action movie would be my, like, we'll get into all of this. I'll start the conversation by generally disagree with the sort of general thought of Star Trek fandom. I don't think this movie is that bad. I'd actually probably peg it as my second favorite of the TNG movies. I agree it has huge flaws. It is problematic as a generation's final journey, which is what it was tagged as. And I think that it doesn't feel as satisfying as it probably should have for its placement. If this had been like if this had taken the third movie spot and Insurrection spot, I think it would be generally better regarded than it actually is.
Yeah. I would agree to an extent. I mean, there's a lot of stuff inside. The stuff that you were saying about Insurrection, about how the characters seem to be disregarding their characters the more as we go along, I felt that more in this one than I did in the last one. Even to the point where when they come across the broken up android and they find out where the ship is and stuff, or where the planet is, and they ask George, he's like, "Was there anybody there?" And he's like, "Well, it's a pre-warp society that's, you know, X, Y, and Z." And usually the answer to that is, well, prime directive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Picard just is like, you know what? Fuck it. I really want to drive a dune buggy, so let's just go.
And then Worf shoots at them. Not only do they they actively try to kill some of the aliens that the prime directive should protect. It's the sort of background of this is that I feel that this movie, out of all of the four TNG movies, is most impacted by the production process in a lot of ways. They hired Stu Baird, who was an editor. As you said, he directed two other movies before this, Executive Decision and like U.S. Marshals, I think was the other one. So they seem to want to go in an action track for this one. And they got that with Stuart Baird. Stuart Baird apparently was somewhat infamous for he knew nothing about Star Trek. He seemed to actively not care about it. I was reading he would call LeVar Burton Laverne the entire time. So the cast didn't like him. And it seems that he's definitely an action director, because this is the best action movie, I think, out of all the Star Treks. Unfortunately, it comes at the expense of being the final film for the TNG crew, so you get zero in the way of character interaction. And the other sort of big production problem is the first cut of the movie was basically 45 minutes longer than what we have here. And what they cut out seems to purely be the character interactions that people who want this to be the final movie would expect from it.
Ah, interesting.
There's a lot of scenes of after the dinner, Picard and Data have a scene where they're alone drinking together and they're talking about how life changes and everything like that. It's much more thematic and ties into Data has a line about he can't foresee anything happening to him in the future and he doesn't know what it would be like to have a change like that happen.
That's really interesting because that kind of explains my thoughts about the movie, but we can get to that later.
Yeah, so there's just a lot of scenes. There's like Beverly and Picard have a final scene together. Riker, you meet the new first officer of the Enterprise and stuff like that. Geordi and Worf clean out
Thomas Data's, Riker.
Thomas Riker. Geordi and Worf clean out Data's room after he's dead. All that stuff. So, why don't you
They throw the hologram of Tasha Yar into the trash.
They should have. Why don't you start us off down a path? What's your general take of this one?
Well, I watched this one a while ago, and I kind of felt the same way you did, where I didn't think it was that bad. And I still don't. I think let's put it this way. The last time I watched it was on my tablet while I was making dinner, so I wasn't paying 100% attention to it. And in that case, my response was, yeah, this is actually pretty good. This isn't bad.
Yep.
But really sitting down and looking at it, it just feels like a hollow shell of a Star Trek movie. You know, it's the action stuff is better. Stuart Baird is a better action director than Frakes is by far. But everything that's happening didn't have any weight to it. You know, they have, it's like I said before, it's a very thematic movie that actually doesn't have any themes in it, because they do all of this stuff that should have thematic weight to it, but it's never really addressed. They have one scene where Picard and Data are talking about how B4 is not Data, even though he looks just like Data, and just because Shinzon's a clone does not mean that he is an exact replica of Picard. That's the only time that they ever bring it up. But yep. I think going into this, one of my memories was, oh, this is the one that's kind of like they kind of rip off Wrath of Khan a bit. Although we realized later that most of them do.
Yeah, that's 80% of the movies.
That's another thing I want to talk about. Maybe we can save it for the wrap up. Is whether or not sacrificing a character immediately gets you compared to Wrath of Khan? Because
right.
I don't think that this is necessarily a Wrath of Khan ripoff, except for the fact that Data sacrifices himself. And I don't know if that in and of itself qualifies as ripping off Wrath of Khan.
Well, I think it somewhat plays off Wrath of Khan, because what they try to do is if it would be much less of a Wrath of Khan thing if Shinzon was not a clone. They make him a clone for seemingly zero reason in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's only to give some kind of personal stakes to Picard.
And see, and that's the thing though, because I don't think it doesn't work, because there's no, him being a clone has like no weight on anything, except for the fact that at the end they have that kind of thing where he's like, oh, he thinks he knows what I'm going to do, but that's not what I'm going to do. Like there's nothing preceding the revelation that he's a clone of Picard that adds any weight to that decision. And then after that point, there's really not anything that adds any weight to that decision.
No, you don't even get a good reason as to why Picard would be upset that his clone is doing this. You know, it's not like they're not
right.
similar enough where Picard would be personally affected by what his clone is doing, because he's, you know, and this goes down to casting another actor. It's a different person. In my mind, when I'm watching this, I never sort of get the link that they're supposed to be together in the sense, like they're supposed to be the same person, because they're totally separate from each other in a lot of ways.
You know what they should have done, now that I'm thinking about it? You know, when they have that one shot of quote-unquote young Picard, which is just Tom Hardy in a Starfleet
cadet
uniform, they should have established that way earlier.
Yeah.
Because if they had used that photo earlier, I mean, nobody knows who Tom Hardy is, like,
right.
at this point in time.
Yeah.
He's just a bald guy. So if they had established that before, then revealing him to be that actor would have made it stick a little harder. But yeah, it's one of those things where when they get into the, like, they actually have to do the thing where he's like, well, we don't look exactly the same because I've been beaten up a lot and my nose has been broken. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, all right, well, I guess these guys don't look exactly alike. They're both bald guys with kind of big noses, really.
Yes, yeah.
With voices that do not sound anything like each other, nor is Tom Hardy, like, trying to do a Patrick Stewart impression, which
right.
I kind of wish he had,
because
I bet that would have been pretty interesting.
Yeah, they have the scene where Shinzon introduces himself, and it's awkward thing where Picard doesn't bring up the fact that he looks exactly like him 20 years, like, you know, it's so understated. They take the blood because Shinzon's like, you're going to want my blood to analyze it.
Yeah.
But no one brings up the fact of he looks just like Picard until they bring it to the lab, and they're like, you know what? He's a clone. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's really strange because, like, I don't know if the intent is to hold the revelation even further for the audience by not making it clear until the blood thing happens. It's a very strange choice.
I agree that introducing the picture earlier would have been nice. And I was also thinking that I would somewhat rewrite this as Picard should be retiring after this movie.
Yeah, there should be some sort of
looking back on your life and reflecting should be focus from the initial part. But it seems like everyone but Picard is leaving, and Picard is just going to continue on his journey as the captain of the Enterprise.
Yeah, and any chance they have to do anything like that, they don't do it. Like, there, even the scene where he's sitting down for dinner with Shinzon, and Shinzon's like, tell me about my family. Have the Picards always been warriors and explorers? And he's just like, no, not really.
Yeah, right.
And that's just it.
I know that dinner scene is so, it's just so underwhelming in terms of all that stuff. And that dinner scene also is where Shinzon's trying to learn about his history and everything. I think the major problem with Shinzon is the fact that his motivation is sort of unclear to me.
Yes,
and
very.
I was thinking that the one thing you can't have a villain be is unclear. You can have them be sort of like mysterious about their aims at first, or duplicitous, and then there's a reveal that this is what they're actually trying to do. But he comes across, I can't tell, and I don't think the movie knows, whether or not he's genuinely interested in learning about his history or if this is all a ploy to get Picard. Because after he does that, his viceroy, played by Ron Perlman, tells him, like, enough of these fun and games, like, we need to do it. And he says, I know, I'm going to do what I need to do. And then he attacks Picard. But it's like, if that was his ultimate goal, why didn't he just do that from the start? Why do they have to sort of have this dinner and talk to each other? And if they have the dinner, he needs to be conflicted about it later. But he's not conflicted. He just wants to kill Picard.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very quick, there's no conflict whatsoever there. And it also, I mean, excuse me. There was a point about maybe halfway or three quarters of the way through the movie where I realized I didn't know what he was even trying to do.
Yeah.
And then at some point he says something like, Earth will blah, 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 be destroyed. And I was like, what? Wait, hold on. He's going after Earth? Why is he going after Earth?
Yeah.
Earth never did. He spent the whole first half of the movie talking about how the Romulans fucking created him and then dumped him onto Remus to die, and that they subjugated the entire Reman people. Why is he going after Earth? Why is he not going to blow up Romulus?
Yeah, yep, yeah.
I mean, and the Romulans, I think, maybe we could talk about this later too, but the Romulans have always, to me, suffered from being sorely undefined. And in this movie, that continues, because they're here, but they don't do anything. And even when they show up again later, it's like they don't do anything. So you don't know what the point of them is, why they're here. Like, so if think about it this way. If the point of Shinzon was that he was going to destroy Romulus, right? Which is a place that the Federation is not really cool with. They've been kind of, that's why they have their neutral zone. They've been in sort of a cold war with them for years and years and years. And they're not exactly the best people in the universe. And the person doing this is young Jean-Luc Picard. So Picard has to deal with whether or not he can, sit idly by or allow this person who is basically him to destroy his enemy, even though his enemy in this case is completely innocent.
Right.
But instead of that, we just get, oh no, he's just going to go blow up Earth.
Yes.
Because no one can, because last time we checked our demographics, very few of our audience members are actually from Romulus.
Right.
It's very hard to identify with the Romulan people. So we need to make it Earth, because everybody knows what Earth is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that sort of analysis and like why it doesn't make sense of what Shinzon's doing. And that would be a better idea to have Picard. It would give Picard a little bit of a decisional weight to what he has to think about Shinzon doing it. It even comes down to the fact that, like, on a Star Trek level, the Romulan symbol, right, is the bird holding the two planets. The planets are Romulus and Remus. So I don't understand why one of the planets is a slave planet, but it's on equal footing with Romulus. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Why everything we've taught about them, Remen wasn't new to this movie, I don't think. Like, this has been mentioned before that the Romulans had two planets. It doesn't feel right that they're basically gun fodder and slave labor for the Romulans, and that the Romulans are also, despite the fact that they've enslaved this planet, are totally unaware of the fact that they're building this mega weapon on it somehow, and that they're being run by the Shinzon character, who is a great general and all that kind of stuff. It feels very lazy in that kind of a way.
Yeah, the giant weapon thing felt super lazy. Like, the last 20 minutes of the movie is literally waiting for their gun to power up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the last half of the movie is basically that one action scene of the ships fighting in the nebula, which, in my opinion, it's the best space battle that Star Trek has ever done.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was tough for me to... I'll be honest, it was tough for me to really kind of gauge it because, like, at that point, I didn't really care.
Sure.
Like, I just, you know, when the Romulan warbirds showed up, at that point, I went, Klingons? Sure, whatever. Like, I didn't realize that they were the Romulan ships because I had completely forgot about the Romulans whatsoever.
Right.
And then, and I was also thinking through that fight. It's like, where the fuck is the Federation? Where's everybody else?
Yeah, they were going to.
Did they explain that?
Well, they were going to meet them on the other side of the nebula, and then when they get in the nebula, they're like, "Oh, we lost communications," and that's when Shinzon attacked them.
I feel like this movie and the last movie, maybe this movie's a little. I must have missed that line, but it seems like it's a little bit cleaner of a decision than it was in Insurrection. But it seems like both of them have a difficulty in coming up with reasons why the Enterprise is the only ship there.
Yeah, that's kind of a general. That even goes back to TOS, right? It's like
the Enterprise
is always the only ship that's around to do anything, and it always gets into these problems.
Which, you know, I guess makes sense because the more ships you got, it's going to be complicated, and you know, but it'd be more expensive.
The original sequence of that battle was supposed to have the fleet also meet them in the nebula, and it was supposed to be a very big battle. They couldn't afford it.
And it's a shame because I think one of the things that you miss out on when you have a battle like this with only, you know, three ships, when one of your ships, you know, regardless of who else is there helping out, like if the Romulans are there, the Klingons are there, the Federation ships are always like the strongest ships, right?
Yep.
At least, if not literally in the movie, in the mind of the viewer. When you have a giant ship like the one that Shinzon is piloting that's supposed to be this, you know, ultimate weapon that, you know, has cloaking device and they can fire when they're cloaked and all this kind of stuff, you'd think it would go a long way to show it destroying other Federation ships.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Or at the very least, not having a tough time fighting three ships at the same time.
Yep.
You know, because it's like there's a rule that Tom Savini, the makeup artist, always used to go by, which was anytime that he had a weapon that he was using in an effect shot, before he did the effect, he would also always make sure that there was a shot where you see the weapon actually, like if it's like a machete or something, right? There'd be a shot where the guy swings the machete, misses, and it like buries itself into a piece of wood, so you see how powerful and how strong a thing actually is. So when you see it strike the actual person, you believe that the damage is real.
Sure.
You know, it's like a little bit of subconscious manipulation to reinforce the effect. And I think that would go a long way in these movies where when the Enterprise is fighting another ship, you actually get a sense of how powerful that ship is because they blow up another Enterprise style ship.
Sure. Yeah.
Or something like that. I mean, you know, the Federation is full of expendable people, so it wouldn't really matter, but at least because they kill people all the time and nobody cares. But it's interesting that they never do that.
Yeah, it's just a purely...
Where's the Excelsior D? I want to blow that ship up.
It's a purely budget problem. And I think it stems into the fact that they can't portray this thing as effectively as they can. The stakes in the movie are generally pretty low. You never get an imminent sense of death. At least they don't make it to Earth, like into Earth orbit, which is always the last bastion of like where the enemy gets in these kind of movies.
I don't even know where they are. I have no idea where they are.
They're in some green version of the Briar Patch from Insurrection, apparently. These new nebulas are taking over everything. I wanted to talk a little bit about the tone of this movie. I think this movie actually looks the best out of all the Star Trek Next Generation movies.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
It's very clean looking. It's edited well. The special effects look pretty good. The the tone is so bizarre, and I think this is probably where we're going to get into like this as a final movie, which is unavoidable. The things that I was reading about it as a final movie is that they said that there was a script idea that John Logan and Spiner were working on a fifth TNG movie that would have been the true resolution, and that they had like an outline or something going like that.
Mm-hmm.
I find this very hard to believe because this movie to me seems like this is definitively ending things. Like outside of Data's death, you have the wedding, right? Everyone goes their own way at the very end. It feels odd. Do you buy the fact that they thought that there was going to be another movie? And I'll say that if this movie had done gangbusters, I would absolutely believe that they would bring it back. But to me, it seems more like they were saying this is going to be the last movie unless something really spectacular happens with it.
Yeah. Excuse me. I would believe the latter. I mean, I think with these things, there's always, you know, at least one toe still in the doorway.
Yeah.
Just in case it does do great. Like, I mean, there are storyboards and production art for Sam Raimi's fourth Spider-Man movie that they never ended up making because the third one sucked so hard.
Yeah.
So, like, they, you know, some of these things, they do make decisions before they can actually, before the chips fall where they do. By outline, I would believe it'd be like Spiner and Logan probably, like, had a couple conversations about it.
Yes, right.
It's probably about as written as the Star Wars prequels were before 2 months before they started shooting.
Yeah.
But you know, I'd be interested. I don't know. The ending does feel pretty final. It doesn't feel like we're separating with the purpose of bringing everybody back kind of thing. It just feels like, yeah, it's the natural progression of things. And even to hear John Logan talk about it, you know, he says that the thing that was always important to him was to make the audience remember that these characters have real lives and that their lives do move on.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he always wanted to, you know, move the ball forward.
I guess that my main problem with this as a final film in this series is that I feel like the tone doesn't fit what the movie is trying to sort of get across. And I think it would tie into the fact that if Nemesis was the third movie and you got rid of the fact that everyone was moving on at the very end of it and you came out with a fourth movie afterwards, it would be a lot better. But
yeah,
to me, this is such a somber movie. There's like so much. It's basically about darkness. They bring up darkness all the time. There's so many close-ups of people looking pensive about what's going to be happening. The music is odd. The music is very gloomy and sad. Everything's lit much lower. The Remens are very dark and everything like that. And the ending of it, where everyone splits up, it's not a triumphant, everyone is now going their own way after conquering this latest adventure. It feels like it's a breakup by disintegration in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it's really unsatisfying and really sort of sad of an ending for the TNG crew. It's not the Undiscovered Country's ending where they're like, oh, now we're friends with the Klingons and everyone's over. And like, what a great accomplishment we've had as our careers. I don't know. What do you think about that? What do you think about the tone and about the film as like a last movie for these guys?
Yeah, it doesn't feel that way at all. And I agree that if they had, if this hadn't been the last one, it might not be as, you know, heavily criticized. Cause it does feel just like it's a fine mid-range movie, you know? But the, all of the stuff that it's talking about, this goes back to my kind of thesis statement on it. All of this idea of everybody's moving on and everybody's separating, the tone of the movie doesn't fit that whatsoever. They don't ever even bring it up.
No, they never talk about it.
Except for the beginning of the movie when he's like, well, I guess I'll have to get a new counselor.
Yeah, in a very sad way, Picard's like, are you sure you want to leave? And they go, yes. And he says, oh, all right. Yeah.
I mean, and that would have been a really great way to do this as sort of an inverse of what they ended up doing with Kirk, where Kirk's thing was always that Kirk is getting older and Kirk is moving on and he wants to stay on the Enterprise, right?
Yep.
So why not take the opportunity with Picard, do the same thing, but Picard is getting older, everybody else is moving on, but Picard is staying on the Enterprise.
Right. It's a big difference because Kirk is the same age as the others on his crew, basically.
Yeah.
Picard is older. in this. And so it would make sense that the others would, like children, they would sort of leave the nest after a while, and Picard would be sort of upset by it.
And it kind of, it would be a nice cap to the character stuff that they started in Generations, because, you know, his whole thing in Generations was that his life was always sort of standing still while the rest of his family was kind of having kids and, you know, X, Y, and Z. And now that the family's gone, he's, you know, so it would have been nice to have him reevaluate that kind of thing where it's like, is this, what am I doing here? Is this what I want to be doing for the rest of my life? Everybody else is moving on. It's being like, it's like being a camp counselor, you know, or the person who runs a camp or something. And everybody, the same kids you've been seeing for 6, 7, 8 years are all of a sudden they've all moved on. And the kids who used to go there then became the counselors. And now even those guys are gone, but you're still there running the camp, you know?
Yeah. And I think that the movie hints at the tone so weakly that you can almost be forgiven for thinking that it exists at all, except that at the end, it's really just, I end up feeling bad for Picard. He never has a lesson learned of this is how life changes. And I have to embrace change and everything.
Yeah,
he basically just, everyone leaves. He looks at Data, who we'll get to the Data ending in a little bit, but he looks at Data, who's sitting there, except he's retarded at this point. Yeah. And
it's like the theme of this movie is everybody's moving on and it makes me sad, but it could be worse. I could have brain damage.
I'll smile at the camera. And the original, the edits that they cut out actually showed more of the crew sort of going their own way at the end. Like everyone gets a kind of final scene where they have an interaction with each other. And this movie ties in the same. I think a big thing that I've never noticed about the TNG movies to this point is how little the crew interact with each other in these movies in a lot of ways.
Did you know Beverly Crusher is actually in this movie?
Yeah, she has two separate lines. She has two scenes where she says one thing, I think.
She doesn't even get to shoot a gun in this one like she did in the last one.
No, she just looks at B4's eyes and everything. And I think that the tragedy of it is that it's just that Picard doesn't have a comeuppance at the end here. And it's such a downer of an ending on a lot of different levels. And then everyone just splinches off and goes their own way. And you don't really it doesn't feel satisfying to me at the very end there.
Yeah. I mean, and even if they had added back in the, you know, the scenes of them kind of splitting off,
my problem with those scenes is after watching them, they take place right after Data has been destroyed and everyone is too happy.
Yeah.
Everyone's back up on oh, well, shit, we got our lives to live. So the problem, I didn't used to think that Data's death was a bad thing in this movie, mm-hmm. but I think it actually is a bad thing. What would you say to that, I guess?
It feels
appropriate and it feels like it makes sense, but I don't think that it doesn't tie in thematically to anything because they cut all the scenes that explain why it would tie in.
Right.
And it's too, it happens at the end of the movie, which is a mistake. Like if he had been blown up at the beginning.
I was thinking that too, if they had blown him up halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly why I had that thought. I had a chain of events after that occurred to me where that would add a little bit more weight to what was happening. But I mean, it makes sense that that's where that shit always happens. You know, if it wasn't him, it would have been the ship.
Right. And I think that his death scene is actually effective. His final goodbye is nice. The callback, I mean, it's not even a callback. It's so obviously when he's like, oh, Captain, how about you take this emergency transporter? And he's no, we'll use that sometime in the future. And then they beam him off. But outside of that, it's still very effective. I like the fact that Picard is too stunned to say anything. And then Data just says goodbye at the very end. That's nice. I think they play it nice. Maybe it's slightly undersold, his death at the very end. But then it goes into this downer of the ending where if he had died in the middle, it could have been about the redemption. Data's death shows Picard that, you know, they're different people. B4 and he are not the same person or something like that.
Yeah.
You could have had B4 be responsible for it in some way.
Yeah, definitely. I think they do actually a pretty good job of not telegraphing it as clearly as these movies usually do.
Well, that's because it's so random in a lot of ways,
that's true,
right?
Yeah. But even that portable transporter thing, doesn't feel like as much of a giant flashing arrow to a later plot point than those things usually do.
Right. He brings it up in a appropriate point when they're trying to get exactly. off the Remen ship.
Yeah. It's not like, it's not quite like, hey, before we go.
At the wedding. I'd like to tell you about, yeah. shaking hands. Says, I got this emergency transporter. You should use this.
Where's Geordi? I thought he was coming. Well, he's been working all night trying to work up that emergency transporter that only one person can use.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the... I think killing off Data in the middle would have made a lot more sense. It would have been a way to tie it in. And then at the end of the movie, I think everyone could have been lifted back to that time where it's okay to be happy again, or at least like chipper yeah. as their things are changing.
I still think that what they should have done, and I know I say that a lot because obviously, you know, I've never made a movie, so who am I to say what they should or shouldn't do? But what they should have done is you kill Data off halfway through the movie, right? And then so B4 then becomes... the imprint, the thing that people are imprinting on to try and deal with their grief. But obviously it's not Data. It's Data with, you know, a bullet lodged in his brain, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that doesn't work. But what happens later is you find out Data has uploaded his consciousness into the Enterprise itself. So his voice becomes the voice of the computer in the Enterprise.
Yep.
So then he helps, you know, so that...
That's the way going forward. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I always thought that, like, so like at the end, when they're in their final, you know, battle or whatever, and the ship is seemingly disabled or whatever, you know, lights start popping back on, and then you hear Data's voice coming over the computer, and, you know, it's like, oh, I've uploaded my consciousness.
Yeah,
and
that kind of stuff. Right, yeah.
And then he's like, let's rock. And they just start blasting the shit
out. Yeah, he says lock and load. A nice callback to Insurrection.
Everybody hold on to your butts. Data's back in the saddle.
Let's talk about the B4 storyline. I think in the long continuing tradition of these movies destroying the character of Data, it didn't used to bother me that much until this recent sort of critical rewatch of this movie. The B4 storyline doesn't make any sense whatsoever. No. You don't know where the hell B4 came from. They never explain that. The fact that lore exists, like, sort of kicks this right in the ass and is just like, it knocks it down a level because you're like, I already know that he has brothers. Like, I know that other androids exist, like Data, so this doesn't really mean anything.
I wish they could have just made it lore.
Yeah, why not be lore? I mean, my problem with it is that I end up feeling bad for B4 because he's like he's so helpless, but everyone just seem perfectly content to just use him in a way that they don't use Data like that. And it's because he's a sort of dumb android, but it's this weird upsetting tone where they're like, well, he's mentally handicapped, so we can do whatever we want with him, kind of.
I did want to ask, are androids not common? In the Star Trek universe?
Data's the only one.
Oh, Data, well, and his family
are the only ones.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Because I was wondering that, because when they find the positronic whatever, and they all kind of have that look on their face. I was like, oh, wait, is that like... I didn't realize that Data was the only android.
Well, they exist in TOS, but they're not... Data seems to be like a super version. Like, they're in TOS, right. They're always kind of like a automaton that's just sort of doing whatever. Data seems to be the pure... He's an artificial intelligence to a level that the other ones have never been to that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And, I mean, B4 continues on by B4 solely exists as a way for Data to get on board the Scimitar at a certain point. And then they lock him up. And then at the very end, they do the horrible reveal where Data had put his memory engrams into B4, and B4 starts singing the song that Data was singing before.
You know, excuse me. I didn't mind that as much this time.
The song singing or B4 in general?
The thing at the end where you know, I was gonna ask this, if whether or not uploading his memory into B4 cheapens his death, and because to me it didn't feel like a landfill situation where it was like, hey guys, let's just start calling me Data from now on.
Yeah, sure.
Pretend that nothing ever happened. Like, it's they do it in such a way where they maintain the thing that B4 is not just Data.
Yeah.
But they also add in the fact that he has some of what made Data in him, if not literally just his entire personality. So I didn't think it was as bad as I had previously.
No,
do you think it cheapens any, do you think it cheapens the sacrifice at all?
I don't know. I think the problem with it is that they're not clear about what's happened to before at the end. And I think when I was younger and I watched this movie, I ended it with the sort of with the way that Picard treats it. I was like, oh, B4 is basically going to grow into Data at a certain point. And like, that's how they would, like if they were to make another movie, right? That's what would happen. B4 would just sort of turn into Data.
Well, it'd be nice. I mean, that's the thing. It would be nice if they didn't do that.
It would be nice
if they stuck to their intent in the scene anyway, to be like, he's not Data, but you know, he's still our pal.
It's a much better ending if they had done something other than his memories are in B4. If there was some other way to sort of pass along Data, like just the memory of Data, without literally basically putting his brain into B4's body.
Well, they should have uploaded Data's brain into Geordi's eye implants.
Yes. Or his robot arm, right, from the that alternate history, the comic.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, in my opinion, I think that the ending isn't as cheap as that, although I do think it takes something of a hit by having that ending where B4 is singing the song. And B4 being basically like handicapped to the point that he is makes it unclear as to where this is going to go. And just the fact that if another movie existed, he would turn into Data over the course of time just kind of annoys me in a certain way.
I also think, though, that you could also have another movie where he's just not even in it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that the intent of having him do the song thing is less to imply that he's going to be a replacement for Data, and more to just be that upbeat for Picard at the end of the thing. The kick in the pants to Picard, just be like, it's not all that bad. And even still, it's like that, I feel like, would work a lot better if you had any idea of what Picard's thematic character journey was.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like if you had this idea that he's dealing with the fact that everything's moving on, or got any sort of indication how he feels about it whatsoever.
Right.
You know, it would mean a little bit more than just being kind of like, oh yeah, that's cute.
Right. Cause we can assume that what they're going for here is that Data dying and then sort of coming back in before, or not coming back, but like if the memory lives on in before, Picard is realizing that despite the fact that things are changing, not everything is changing as drastically as he thought it was. Right. Like that's kind of what they're trying to say. I think they don't do a very good job of it because, as you say, Picard never talks about what his problem is this entire movie. And I think that it does a disservice to it in that sense. It's just if you're going to do that, it's hard for this to be the last movie of the series and just to end it on that kind of a note. And before being what B4 is, it's the, you know, like you were saying, putting him into the ship feels more important, even though it's not the Enterprise D, it's this new Enterprise that feels more connected to the universe than B4 does. So B4 feels like he was just dropped into this story because they needed a way for Data to impersonate somebody and get on the ship. It's a sad thematic take on everything. I think
we
continued our just downgrading the emotion chip to eventually he just doesn't have the emotion chip anymore.
There's even a thing where they ask him how he feels about it. And he's like, what are you talking about? I don't have feelings.
Right. Yeah.
Why would you say that to me?
I would say.
And nobody's like, well, didn't you have a, you know, never mind.
You were scared. That time I got kidnapped, you got scared.
Yeah. Geordi should have been like, oh, you don't feel anything now, motherfucker.
Is this the best representation of Data throughout the TNG movies? I think yes. Because they mostly abandon the emotion chip, and the only way that this movie... You can't have Data with emotions in this movie and have the whatever theme they're trying to get across work, right? Because the reason...
Right, yeah, I would agree.
The Data not feeling anything about this is the reason that they can play it off against Picard, basically.
Yes, yeah.
So getting rid of the emotion chips, to me, he still has a few dumb jokes, like when he sings and dances at the wedding.
I feel like that's got to be in his contract, because he's done it in every one of the movies. He's sung a song.
And but to me, this is the Data that feels the most like the series Data. And I appreciate it for that, even though I think that they continue to not understand the character as well as they did in the series at this point.
Yeah, and I can only assume that probably, well, I just said he probably has it written into his contract that he gets to sing a song, but I also think he, in being involved in the story, he probably has a better wrangle on the character.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you can never tell with that stuff, because sometimes people who play a character for long enough want it to do stuff different, you know, so.
Yeah, or they have a take that's totally not what anyone else would think about the character, and that's how they're playing it. It just isn't coming across or whatever.
I also saw a thing where Brent Spiner is like, yeah, you know, I always thought that Data should just wear sunglasses and have an earring.
Yep.
Yeah, but that luckily nobody went for that.
No, no, absolutely not. So, I guess
Rastafy him by about 13%.
In another, like another, I think what you're saying, that the general failing of this movie is that it's thematic while simultaneously having no theme or no examination of any kind of thematic material in it is like the greatest problem with it. Comes down to even the Riker versus the Remen Viceroy fight, right? Like, thematically, you have the two second in commands fighting each other, right?
Yeah.
And it comes across as this total time killer where the initiation of it doesn't make sense. I assume Riker's chasing after him because he hit on Troy at some point. So Riker's like, fuck this guy, I'm going to go get him.
He does a little bit more than hit on Troy.
Well, that's right.
Just a hair.
I think of the opening Shinzon scene where he moves protectively. But it ties the Troy thing is weird because the Troy thing here, and I've mentioned in previous, it would have been Star Trek VI, the Spock with a Valeris mind melt, like the forced mind melt.
Yeah.
And that I didn't at least have that big of a problem with it in that movie, because I felt in that movie it kind of makes sense. Yep. Here, it makes no sense what's going on and why they're doing this and why. It happens the one time. And it seems to me like it's almost a worse example of the emergency transporter, where they do it just to set up the fact that this is how they're going to find them at the very end.
Yeah, it's to get to a point where Troy actually uses her empathic powers in literally any beneficial way during a fight.
Yeah.
Is really not good.
Right. I think it's terrible. This is the one sort of mental rape episode where I would be like, this is just poorly conceived on all levels. Like, this didn't need to happen this way. There's no reason for the villain to do it. There is a reason in Undiscovered Country. Spock needs the information, so he has to compromise his principles to get this information. Here, they seem to be doing it just for shits and giggles, and then it comes back to haunt or bite the Viceroy in the ass at the very end.
Yeah, I think it falls into the umbrella for the use of, like, rape as a villainous character distinction,
yep,
which is almost never a good idea. It's always a really bad shortcut, and it's generally pretty offensive.
Yeah, it just doesn't tie into anything that Shinzon is he should be all consumed by whatever the fuck the movie thinks his goal is at this point.
Yeah,
because
part of it, you could make the argument that if they had leaned into his he seems to be curious about what Earth is like and what Earth life is like.
Yes.
And
although that's very confusing when he meets her, he says, I've never met an Earth woman. And she goes, I'm half human. He says, that's right. Or he goes, Deanna Troi, the Beta Zed. So he knew it immediately, but he's still fucked up the introduction.
I do have to say the can I touch your hair thing is pretty funny.
Well, it's actually another case of the deleted scenes. This was like, I think the original script is better than what this movie is, because there's a deleted scene where, and I don't think this happens in the movie. What they do is that Troy gets attacked again by Shinzon in the same sort of situation. And Picard visits her and he's like deeply troubled by it. And Crusher just ends it with Jean-Luc, like, he's not you. You can't hold yourself responsible for this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that ties into the, you know, at least hinting at the fact that Picard is traumatized because he sees the darkness in Shinzon in himself in some way, which they never talk about, but at least they're trying to hint at it to be a reason.
That's still pretty rough, because you're still using Troy's violation as a bolstering character point for Picard.
Yes, yeah.
Like to
it's still to bad. Get, it's just a more fleshed out version of bad.
It has mildly more fleshed out. But to get to the point where they get where Troy uses her power to fire on the ship, which I thought was legitimately good. I like that. I was glad that they finally did something with her, and that was a cool way to do that and cool way to solve the cloaked ship problem. I feel like you could have done that. You could have got to that point in a much less invasive way. Like she could have had more. So the scene where they meet Shinzon the first time, if that had just been like maybe a 5 minute longer scene that involved everybody else and had some sort of like mental showmanship thing happen between the Viceroy and her, like something to imply that maybe he's trying to force his way into her mind,
right?
Like, yeah, so, something that's not just, you know, the only sex scene in all of Star Trek ends up being a mind rape, you know?
Yeah.
I still maintain that Insurrection is the sexiest Star Trek because that sex scene is not sexy.
Yeah, it's the sexiest just because it's like the most like vanilla. Like there's no deviancy in any of the sexual nature of Insurrection or anything. It's just, it's very missionary position and things like that. I mean, I guess that I had one question for you. Apparently when Riker is fighting the Viceroy at the end, right, and he kicks him off into the pit and he dies like the Emperor in Star Wars, apparently Riker originally had a line of dialogue that before he kicked him off, he said, "It's dark in hell." Then they recorded it. It was actually like in the first cut. Would you have been happy with that line, or do you think that line is no good?
That's a terrible line.
It ties in because the Remans are all about the darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that because after they tumble down the thing like Kirk does in Generations, but they don't both fall off the thing. Did you think of that too when they were on that little catwalk and it started to tumble?
It's like,
oh, that must be the same prop. when he kicks him off, they cut back to his face, and then they cut back to Riker's face, and then they cut away. And the first thing I thought was, I bet he had a line here, and it just didn't work,
so
they cut it. Because it's like, it felt like, you know, the camera's on him, and they were like, all right, on this one, John, wait a couple beats before you say the line, you know, just in case it's not good, we need to cut, so we have enough lead time that we can still use the shot.
Yeah, yeah. That fight just feels so pointless to me. It's a storyline to add into what is generally a pretty slow space battle at the end there.
It would make more sense to me if it was the Viceroy and Troy.
Sure. Violations episode was the mind rape one where Sean and Tana came on. Our main problem with that one is that Troy doesn't solve the crime at the end. Worf comes in and punches the guy.
Yeah.
It's the same thing here.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't have to have it be a straight up fist fight, you know, because that fight wasn't anything interesting to watch anyway. But I mean, having like, so if your kind of side plot of your thing here is maybe that the Viceroy just kind of has a boner for Troy, so he's going to go out of his way to kind of peel off and go after her kind of thing. So then you got to have like a cat and mouse thing, because he's obviously the stronger physically, and then she ends up getting the upper hand on it. Like, that would have been really satisfying, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would have justified the mind rape, but it would have been a very satisfying way to conclude that thing instead of just having her weepily shoot a photon torpedo at a ship.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the rape thing is lazy, but the laziest part about it to me is that if you just use it in place of a story, like you can have, you can have those scenes and have, if that character arc and that interaction was something that spanned the movie, it makes it better. And instead they don't do that. They cut all the meat out, and it's really just like the marrow of the bone is all that's left, if even that.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because, you know, every one of these things that we're talking about improving adds like 15 minutes to the movie.
Yes,
so the biggest problem you have with movies, and probably even more so television, is you only have so much time to do this stuff in. So
does this movie drag for you?
I think it does a little bit.
It drags in the second half for me quite a bit.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of talking in this movie.
Yeah.
And like there was a couple things that I liked, that some of the talky scenes, like they had a nice everybody in the conference room scene. Like they had like callbacks to the show, which were nice.
Yeah, I actually, it's funny you mentioned that. The design of the conference room made me happy. It looks like an updated version of the Enterprise D's conference room.
Are you bummed that they downgraded the Cerebro room into just like a giant screen?
It was so much better in Generations, and in this one it's the same exact tech, only the room is less impressive.
Yeah. But you only have so much time to do this stuff, so obviously a lot of the stuff is going to get cut. And the nature of having an ensemble movie like this is that you've got more people to focus on, and that's why I'm sure we'll talk about this in our wrap up. Like the TNG is a little hampered because they have so many well defined characters that it's tough to really do a movie and feel like all of them get something to do.
Yes. Yeah. So
you know, it would have been great to focus more on Troi and her resolution and storyline with the Viceroy, but you know, that's an entire subplot of a movie right there.
Yes.
You know?
I think it drags. I think it's, and the fact that the first cut of the film was 45 minutes longer than this is, it's conflicting to me, because it's A, it's all the stuff that I would have wanted to see out of the movie, but B, you can't have a 3-hour movie about this. Like, you need to. I think a big problem is that this movie has about 80% too much Shinzon in it, and he's not interesting enough, and he's not clearly defined enough to be worthwhile as a thing, especially because they don't explore the Picard relationship to him. Cut all this Shinzon garbage out and just have him sort of be out there, and they know about him, and then you can build off of everything else and sort of develop the finality of the characters can be explored and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so much, you know, like I was saying about the Romulan stuff, there's so much Romulan stuff with him and with Shinzon and the Romulans, that's just like, who cares? Just cut that shit out.
Three different conversations where he's like, after I'm done with this, I'm going to come back and yell at you because you question my authority.
Yeah.
He does that a couple times.
Even that opening scene where he kills the Senate or whatever, it's just like, it doesn't really have any bearing on anything.
No. And it's kind of a big coup that's handled very quickly, right? Like, it seems like you can just coup things deal. And just everyone's like, well, the Romans are like, yeah, he killed our entire government, but I guess we're going to follow him now because he seems pretty cool. He's got one ship.
You know what would be nice? If this movie had been made like last year, I bet those extra scenes, I bet they would have like cut them together and put them on the internet or something as like last day on the ship, like web extra or something like that.
Yeah.
Which honestly, that probably would be a pretty satisfying watch.
Yeah.
You know?
I think so. I mean, does the fact that, I guess we'll wrap it up with a discussion of, does the fact that this is the last movie change your opinion of it based on, like, does it change it from what you think the movie is by itself? And my decision or my like understanding of it after watching this past time would be, It ties back into my just switch the order of this one. If you switch this and this was not the final movie, I think it would be better than it actually is, because this is the tone is almost like it's not exactly, it's just a good, decent metaphor. It's kind of the Empire tone. Like, it's kind of the darkest hour for the crew in a lot of ways, like just the way the movie looks and the tone and how dark everything is. And then you can sort of come back at the end and have a real resolution to it. It's super unsatisfying as a TNG finale to me. That's my like second point after the fact that it's filled with theme, but yet has no theme at the same time.
Yeah, I as dark as it gets, I don't feel like it's as satisfying as the darkness that they get in First Contact. There's no point in, and not that every movie has to do this, but there's no point in this movie where you feel like the crew is at odds with each other or anything, or like there's any sort of, you know, even conflict or even tension between any of the characters. You know, it's one of those Star Trek movies, and they have a formula or a theme where some of the movies just have a thing that's happening and the crew is also there.
Yes.
You know, and this is one of those where it seems like, given what they were trying to do with the idea that time is going on and these people are growing apart or whatever, you would want to lean into that, where your crew is starting to, under the pressure, you're seeing the cracks form, like the scene in First Contact with where they're deciding to blow up the ship and that kind of, like, I feel like that a scene like that would have been welcome in this movie.
Yeah.
but you know, it's just not there.
No, it's totally missing. Well, I think,
and you know, and you've got, and I think that's where Data's death could have really been a binding factor. Not to turn it into like the Big Chill or something, but like if you've got the crew under this immense amount of pressure for whatever reason, starting to fray and losing the battle, and then Data sacrifices himself, and that becomes like the rallying cry for everyone to be like, hey, you know what? This is stupid. We shouldn't be arguing about this.
Right.
We need to come back together and drive our ship straight down the asshole of his ship.
I'm glad
they finally did.
They did it, yeah.
Because it finally justifies the ships being so fucking close together.
I was thinking that this is that impact where the ships collide with each other is everything that I kind of feel is missing from the Generations ship destruction. Like, you can't just blow up the ship for no, like, you have to have the sacrifice of the ship mean something for it to be important. And, you know, if this had been the Generations thing and this is what caused the ship to be destroyed, I'm glad they didn't destroy the Enterprise-E at the very end of that, because it would have been too much, I think. But
yeah, I do really like that he calls for the self-destruction of the ship and the ship's like, no, I'm not going to do that.
I can't do that at this point.
That was satisfying. It also, I did also notice that it only really occurred to me now when I was watching this that I think every one of these movies, the ship is in full working order, as opposed to the TOS movies where they're always broken down or busted or something.
Oh yeah, that's true. This one's fresh off the lot. It should be okay.
Yeah, they're all. But in the TNG ones, they're always just kind of like out on a mission.
Which is
refreshing to an extent.
Yeah, yeah. And I just wanted to close with your point about Data being the sort of catalyst for like the change of the crew coming together.
That
fits perfectly with the way that Data would work in the series, I think.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
Data's sort of outsider status and his not really understanding the sacrifice, or him not having an emotional reaction to his sacrifice, would be the thing that would cause everyone else to realize their inner humanity is kind of the point of Data as a character.
Yeah.
And that would have worked in this movie, and they don't do it. They just don't do it.
So here's a question for you. Would these movies, these four movies, work better for you as a whole, right? If the order that you watch them in was First Contact, Insurrection, Nemesis, Generations.
Would I put Generations? Yeah, Generations has to be the last movie, right?
Like,
that's probably the best order.
Maybe you could just be like, when you get to Generations, that they've adapted before to turn into Data at that point. But like thematically it feels like Generations should be the last movie, right?
Yeah, and even just with down to the ship being destroyed, it feels like that's the end of that kind of an era. But it thematically, in the fact of accepting the Generations was the one where Picard comes to terms with what Nemesis is trying to say, sort of that change happens,
right,
but you can be happy with it,
right?
Yeah, I mean, so First Contact, Insurrection.
Actually, you know what? I might do Insurrection first, now that I think about that.
It's the most easy go. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, because then you could lead into the high action of First Contact.
Yeah, because, and it sort of establishes the Picard thing of like how he's spending his time. And
yeah,
all that
sort
kind
of realizing
stuff.
That he sees things outside of Starfleet for the first time.
Yeah,
like he's starting to think about leaving and everything like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Insurrection, First Contact, Nemesis, Generations. That's interesting. It's almost like a ring theory for Star Trek, the TNG movies. Watch them in that
what's
order.
What is it called? The Hatchet Order?
The Hatchet Order. So Roddenberry clearly wrote these from the grave with that to be the intent. So you guys should go out and watch those things in that order.
If you notice, the first scene of Generations lines up perfectly with the last scene of Star Trek Nemesis.
Yep, both Patrick Stewart is in both scenes, so it clearly it's clearly a perfect.
Actually, wait, that's actually not true. He's not in the first scene of Generations.
Ah, well, it was a bad editing. Eric Stewart Baird fucked up the editing on Generations. I think that's it. We're done with the movies. We're gonna have a wrap up podcast after this one. It'll just be about 10 to 15 minutes of me and Clay sort of giving our general thoughts of the 10 movies as a whole and where they stand, like everything like that. But do you want to lead it off with just roughly where do you think Nemesis would place in your hierarchy of these movies?
Within the TNG movies, I would probably put it geez, I don't really know if I'd ever watch this movie again, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I find Insurrection just to be really boring. I can't move off of that. I would probably throw
this one on just to throw it on because it's, I feel like it's probably got, unfortunately, most of the TNG movies are like, which would I want to watch while I'm doing something else?
Yes.
Yep. Because they're not really worth, well, except for First Contact, they're not super worth paying 100% attention to. But I think Nemesis is a better half watch than Insurrection is.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I'd have Nemesis would be in the bottom middle tier of mine. It's like a low B tier, probably.
Yeah. Is it, you're talking about the everything as a whole?
Everything as a whole. And the TNG movies, it actually is my second favorite. Favorite's probably the wrong term, but I would order them First Contact, huge gulf, then it would be Nemesis, Generations, Insurrection.
I think I would probably actually go First Contact, huge gulf, Generations, Nemesis, Insurrection.
Okay.
Because just based on the fact that Generations has these movies, the ones that take place after Generations don't really have a nostalgia factor to them.
No, they don't.
But Generations does, not only because it's got Kirk and the other guys in it, but also because it's the original ship and costumes and stuff from TNG. So I could see putting that one on in the days. Let's put it this way: before Netflix was available, if all I had was the DVDs for the movies, because the DVD sets for the TV show were just too damn expensive, I would probably put Generations on more than some of the other ones.
Sure. And I, that's a good point to bring up. What'd you think of the uniforms in this one? They're late stage Deep Space Nine uniforms. They're my favorite uniforms. You prefer the color on the shirt shoulders or the jumper shoulders, but this is the.
I think I still prefer those ones, but the ones in this movie do make a lot of sense. They are. I didn't realize they were Deep Space Nine ones because the first thing I thought was, man, are they just doing the full body black just to hide how fat everybody's getting?
Yeah, Michael Dorn in particular looks like he's gained 50 pounds in this movie. Yeah. He's very, very heavy.
I do like the gray top with the turtleneck. It's a good look. Oh, we didn't even mention that Janeway was in this movie.
Yeah, spoilers for Voyager. She gets home at the end of Voyager. Yeah. So if anyone.
And Brian Singer has a very brief cameo.
Yep. Yeah, Brian Singer. And they mentioned the Dominion War again in this one. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously a big thing. I think we're pretty much done with it. We're going to have the wrap up and then sort of discuss it. So any final thoughts for Nemesis before signing off? I don't really have anything.
I think the one thing I was going to say that I didn't was you kind of touched on a little bit. I think the death scenes in general are good. I liked Shinzon's death scene. Where he like pulls himself in through the spot. I didn't like how they get there. Like him, Picard pulling down that spike was kind of hokey. But after
it's
he
like
gets
he's
stabbed,
at it's like he's at that armory museum in Worcester, Higgins Armory or something. He just pulls down some random thing from the wall.
Yeah. But you know the thing where he's like pulling himself closer to Picard and then kind of dies with his head on his chest. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Data's death scene was good. So there's some good stuff in here. The wedding scene, Picard's speech was very accurately kind of awkward and not as funny as he thought it was.
Yeah, yep. Which I felt is true to character, actually. I don't think Picard would be a very good wedding speech giver.
Yeah, probably not. Well, I hope he is, because I stole some of his lines for a speech I had to give at a wedding once. It seemed to go over well.
It's all about tone,
Worf seemed to be drunk from the get-go at that, but which actually kind of makes sense.
That felt very TNG humor to me, that scene.
I think the best joke in the movie is when he berates him about going naked to the thing, and then he says, I'll be in the gym. That was pretty good.
See, and just pairing it off, to me, the interactions of the crew in this one felt more realistic than Insurrection did, where they were too jokey. Here, it felt like they can have jokes, but there's still a clear chain of command going on.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that when they keep it, because that's what the series did.
And Guinan, too.
Guinan was in there. Yeah, and Wesley Crusher.
I was going to say, was Crusher in there? I wasn't looking for him, but I remembered after the fact that I thought he was there.
Yeah, he has he had some lines that were cut in the deleted scenes, but he is in the movie at the wedding table at the very beginning, but you don't see him outside of a wide shot.
Nice.
Yeah, there's no reason to bring him back.
Yeah, overall, it's all right.
Yeah, I think it's been every single TNG movie, so some of it is fine. Yeah, we're going to end it there. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Clay, thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I've been enjoying watching these. It's been a while since I've seen them, so it's been fun to go through them again.
Yeah, we've had our definitive rewatch of all of them. But guys, if you're on YouTube, like in the comments, appreciate it. You can rate us on iTunes or any of the podcatchers. All that stuff helps. Facebook.com/ThePenskePodcast. Patreon.com/ThePenskeFile. Support the show. Get content. Get podcasts that we talk about stuff other than Star Wars. Or Star Trek, rather. We do talk about Star Wars sometimes. And that's about it. We're done. We're moving on to Deep Space Nine. We're going to have the wrap-up podcast episode. I'll do an introduction podcast for the episode for Deep Space Nine, and then we're in it with Emissary. So everyone who's been pining for Deep Space Nine to start, it's about to happen. Came up. It only took 10 weeks to get through 10 movies. Who would have thought? Maybe 11 weeks. But anyway, me and Clay are going to come back with the sort of wrap-up video, wrap-up podcast about explaining our thoughts about all these movies. Until then, see you next time.